the beginning of the Sedra. This Sedra is Ha'azinu, and it is one of the Shiros, of the 10 Shiros that were said. And the Torah refers to it in last week's Sedra and gives the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah in that through the mitzvah of writing Sefer Shiras HaZinu. Kisvu lachem es HaShira HaZos. So some learn, the Rambam, that how do we know that it means to write the whole Torah? Maybe it means only to write HaZinu. But there's a halacha that you can't write separate parshios of the Torah. So since you can't write separate parshios, if there's a mitzvah to write the parsha of HaZinu, that Shira, then there's a mitzvah to write the whole Torah. Other Rishonim learn that Shira refers to the entire Torah. The entire Torah is called a Shira, the song. If that's the case, then the following Gemara is very difficult. Because the Gemara says that David HaMelech was punished because he said, Zmiros hayu li chukecha. Torah he compared to Zmiros, to songs. The Vashem said, how can you possibly call the Torah a song? Seems to belittle the importance of the Torah by calling it a song. And therefore he was punished. What was his punishment? That he forgot something that even school children know. That you're not allowed to put the Aron on a wagon. You have to carry it on your shoulder, the Levium. And when he made that mistake and he put it on the wagon, so then it appeared like it was falling off the wagon, and Uzzah put his hand to support it, and he was killed. So all of that was generated because David HaMelech called the Torah Zmiros. But what's the problem? The Torah itself calls itself a Shira. Kisvu lachem es HaShira HaZos. So what's the difference if it calls it Zmiros or the Torah calls it Shira? I think the difference is there is a fundamental difference between Shira and Zimra. Shira is a song that represents the essence of something. Perek Shira is a fashionable school of these days. Perek Shira is the song that every creation sings. Each one has its specific song. Just like Malachim sing their Shira, trees and animals and all different kinds of animals sing their Shira, and there's psukim, what their Shira is. Many learn that does not mean that they sing this song. It means that this represents their essence. If you want to know what the essence of that thing is, this pasuk represents the essence. The song is something that represents the essence of the thing. And it could be that the word Shira has a connection to the word Yashar. The song emanates directly from the essence of the person. That is Shira, or the essence of the thing. A malach says Shira, it expresses its essence. That's what Shira is. Zimra, on the other hand, is an external thing. It comes from the lashon of Zmira. Zmira means to prune. Prune a tree. What's pruning? You take a utensil and you cut away the weaker branches or the excessive branches, and that stimulates the tree to grow better. It's an external stimulus, zimra. A zimra is not the essence of the thing. A zimra is an external stimulus that arouses you, inspires you, or whatever. A shira is the kind of song that expresses your essence, and a zimra is an external stimulus that encourages growth and additional things. Could be that's the meaning of the following pasuk: Ashira Lashem b'chayai, azamra lelokai b'odi. I'll sing to Hashem with my life. My life, I will express my very life through shira. But odi, the extra things that I have, the ode, that is expressed through zimra. Those are the extra things that are generated and stimulated by external things. Torah is a shira. Ki heim chayenu va'orech yomenu. Torah is the very essence of a person's life. But it's not a zimra, It's not an external stimulus. You can't separate the Torah from the essence of the person. And that is exactly the punishment. Mita keneged mita. Because David HaMelech looked at the Torah or gave the impression that Torah is an external thing, he therefore forgot that you have to carry the Torah and not separate it from the person. So he put the Torah on a wagon, separate, and the mail of what's it called, he made the mistake of thinking that the Torah is a separate thing from the person. And because of that, when people think the Torah is a separate thing, then they think that they have to support the Torah. And they don't realize the Torah supports them. The Chafetz Chaim says there's a difference between how people look when they give support to Torah. They give moral support or monetary support. Eitz Chaim hi l'machazikim ba v'tomcheho me'ushor. He says like this. Someone who thinks that when he supports the Torah, he's doing the Torah a favor. He's supporting the Torah. He's fortunate. But it's not an Eitz Chaim for him. It's not a tree of life. To whom is it a tree of life? L'machazikim ba. When you're drowning and a log passes by and you hold on to it for dear life, that's called the hachazik, to hold on to something for dear life. People who know that when they support Torah, it's supporting them. Machazikim, for them it's an Eitz Chaim. And that's why the Aron, when you carried it, it carried you. You didn't actually carry it, it carried you. So Uzzah thought that he needs to support the Aron. The Aron's going to fall without him. When you begin to think that the Torah is an external thing and it's not the essence of your life, then you begin to think you have to support the Torah. And that's why he put his hand to the Aron to support it, and that's why he died. So therefore, that is the difference between Shira and Zimra, and even though the Torah calls itself a Shira, it doesn't refer to itself as Zimra, and that was where David HaMelech went wrong. Okay, any questions on that? Now we'll go to the next evening. What I'm going to tell you now is no chiddush, but it's a marah makom. You should look up this nitziv in Hemek Dover yourselves and see it in its entirety. The nitziv says that the pasuk, tzadik v'yashar hu, hatzur tamim pa'alo kichol v'rachav mishpat, El emuna ve'ein avel, tzadik v'yosher hu. The Rabban Hashem is a tzadik and a yosher. He says that Chazal darshan this pasuk as a tzidduk hadin, as a justification or an acceptance of the din of churban bayisheni. That when the Rabban Hashem destroyed bayisheni, it was warranted, and we accept the din. That pasuk is used to express that tzidduk hadin. Specifically for the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. In that acceptance of the din, we say that the Rabban Hashem is a tzaddik v'yosher. And he explains the following. Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer HaYosher because it's the Sefer of the Avos who were Yesharim. And he explains, what is that midah of Yesharim? The Avos were Yosher, they were straight people insofar that even though they may have hated the evil of the Goyim around them, even Sodom, but they dealt with these people in a straightforward, fine fashion. Avraham Avinu hated the Rishus of Sodom, yet he davened for these people in hope that they could be saved and salvaged. When a person deals with other human beings in a straightforward, honest way, that's called a yasher. He said the problem in Bayesheni was the Chora, they had Sinas Chinam, and they were mamash killing each other. There were all different factions in Klal Yisrael, and one was killing the other. Led to Shvichas Damim, terrible Shvichas Damim. He said, why? Why was there Sinas Chinam? He said, the Sinas Chinam was generated because these people learned Torah, and they were Talmidei Chachamim. But they felt that if anybody didn't serve the Rabban Hashem exactly as them, then they were apikursim. There's only one way, my way. And if you don't do it my way, then you're an apikoros. And it's a mitzvah to hate apikursim and even kill apikursim sometimes. So they hated each other and killed each other, l'shem shamayim. That's not yosher. That's not straight. He says that even though They were tzaddikim and chassidim and lomdei Torah. They weren't yishorim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't stand people like that. And that's why they were destroyed. To be a tzaddik and a chassid and a lomdei Torah, but if you're not yashar, the Rabban Shalom is a yashar. He's straight. And he doesn't like people who are crooked. And the crookedness was that they couldn't see how to deal with people who weren't exactly like them in a straightforward way, as the Avos did. As the Avos dealt, even with the Goyim, Rishoyim around them, who they hated their Rishos, but they dealt with them in a very straight and an upright manner. That's what he says. It's good to see it inside. We will have the opportunity, perhaps, to enlarge upon this some other time. There's more things in the Seder that I want to get to, but it's important to realize that the Chafetz Chaim was once asked, why aren't all Jews the same? Why don't they all dress the same, have the same pronunciation, and do the same minhagim? So many different kinds of Jews within the realm of Torah. We're not talking about people outside the realm of Torah. Different minhagim, chassidim and misnagdim, and different kinds of chassidim, and sfardim and ashkenazim, and so on and so on and so on. And within the groups, there's different differences. In the litvisha, so there's this yeshiva tells, and there's mir, and there's all different drachim of Torah. Why can't it all be one generic way? Now, it doesn't say in the story what way he was referring to, but I'll tell you, his way. That's what he wanted. Everybody should be like me. So the Chafetz Chaim said, why are you asking me that question? Go and ask the Tsar why he has so many different divisions in his armies. Infantry and cavalry and air force and marines. Wouldn't it be much cheaper and more streamlined if everybody did one thing? Same uniform, everybody's in the marines or everybody's in the air force and that's it. He said, of course, it would be much more streamlined, it would be much more economical, but I never win a war. So it would say the Tsar. I need to cover all bases. So too, we are God's army. And in order to cover all bases, we need all kinds of different kinds of Jews. The Chafetz Chaim, I think before him, already Reb Leibele Eger said, in the end of the Gemara in Tainis, the Gemara says that in the future, God is going to make a big circle, a dance, circular dance for all the tzaddikim. And he's going to sit in the middle, and they're all going to point to the middle and say, Zeh Elokeinu Kivinu Lo. This is the God we waited for. Chafetz Chaim says, sounds like kindergarten. That's Olam Haba. Rav Shalom sitting in the middle like the Ganenet and everybody dancing around him. What does it mean? He says like this. He says, in this world, there are all different approaches to Torah. Legitimate approaches. There are illegitimate approaches too. But there are many different flavors. When I left America, Howard Johnson's, I had 36 flavors. Howard Johnson could have 36 flavors. Torah could have a lot more. Legitimate approaches to Torah. There are tzaddikim who emphasize limud haTorah. They also do chesed, and they also daven, but their emphasis is limud haTorah. And amongst them, there's all different approaches to how to learn Torah. Some learn gemara, and some learn chumash, and some learn pilpul, and some learn deep, and some learn shallow, and all different kinds. Some learn halacha, some learn agada. All different approaches of emphasis. And then there are tzaddikim who emphasize gemilas chasadim. They learn Torah, and they do avodah, but their emphasis is gemilas chasadim. There's all different kinds. There's gemilas chasadim with orphans and with widows and with poor people and with sick people. All different approaches to chesed. And then there are tzaddikim whose emphasis is avodah, tefillah. They also learn, and they also do chesed, but the emphasis is tefillah. And some daven loud, and some low, and some with this havar and this nusach, and so there's a plethora of different drachim to the Rabbanu Shalom. And everybody thinks their derech is the one that hits the spot. And everybody else is out there somewhere in left field. La'asid lavo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take all the tzaddik and put them on a big circle. You could have a tzaddik over here who's 180 degrees away from a tzaddik up here. Completely different derech. But where's the Rabbanu Shalom in the middle? And all the radii from the circumference of the circle to the middle are equal. They're all going to point and say, my derech is equidistant from somebody else's derech, they all are equidistant from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Somebody once told me, after I told them this, that it doesn't say it's a circle, it says a dance. That means everybody's moving. So La'ashid Lavo, everybody's going to come to everybody else's place and experience their derech. But in this world, you have to have one derech. But the truth is that Klal Yisrael has many, many different drachim that are legitimate. There are, like I said, illegitimate, and not every derech that's legitimate, it doesn't have things about it that need to be corrected. Everything needs correction. Doesn't mean there can't be musr and tochacha, but not because I discount somebody else that his derech is nothing. It's because just as much as I want somebody to give me musr and tochacha to hone in and correct my derech, I want to help them and that should correct their derech. But not that I'm only my derech is right and they're completely wrong. That can't be. That's not yashar. That's not yashrus. So therefore, the tzidduk ha-din, the acceptance of the din of the destruction of second base HaMikdash, was because the Ribbono Shel Olam is yashar and they weren't yashar. And being yashar means being able to accept and not only condone, but what's the word I'm looking for? To be able to fargin, I say in English, to be able to be sovel somebody else's derech too. There's a word for it, and I can't think of it. Yeah, anybody? To be what?
Like they are there and you have yours.
Right. There's a word for that, though. What?
Tolerant,
that's the word. Thank you very much. To tolerate somebody else's way. That's yosher. If you can't, then you're not a yosher. So the Ribbono Shel Olam is praised not only being a tzaddik, he's also a yosher. A person shouldn't only be a tzaddik, he should be a yosher too. Okay, yes?
Let's say these groups are Purushim and Tzaddikim.
Right, so then we said there are legitimate.
Legitimate
means you have to be on the circle. In order to be equidistant from the center, you have to be on the circumference of the circle. But if you're not on the circle, you're out somewhere else, then what makes you on the circle? That you are ne'aman to Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. You have a Mesorah from someone who was ne'aman to Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh, that you can say this person created this Mesorah. And you believe in the Yud Gimel Ikrei Hadas. All of those things are the basics. That puts you on the circle. If you don't believe in all of those things, right, then you're not on the circle. Then you're not equidistant from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Then your path may be going somewhere else. But if you're on the circle because you accept those things, then it's just a matter of where on the circle you are. Okay. Next. The Pasuk says the following. How a person should learn history and learn from history. Zechor Yemos Olam, remember the days of yore, days of the world. Binu Shnos Dor Vador, the simple meaning I'm going to tell you now, then we'll go a little bit more deeper. Understand the years of every generation. Sha'al Avicha V'Yagedcha, ask your father and he'll tell you. Zekeinecha v'yomru lach, and your elders, and they will tell you. Okay. What does it mean? What's this? Seems a lot redundant. There is an idea to learn from history. Right? As the, I don't know who said it, but somebody said it, that if you don't learn from history, then you are doomed to repeat the same mistakes. Okay. Some non-Jew said that, and it's MS, so you're allowed to say, allowed to quote MS from anybody. Okay. I just feel bad. I don't know who said it. Whoever, have somebody know who said it? Yeah. Could be. Okay. I will take your word for it. In any case, so there's a mitzvah to learn history and to learn from history. Zechor Yemos Olam. Remember the days of yore. Remember what happened. Binu Shnos Dor Vador. The second thing, though. What applied in one situation may not apply in your situation. Binu, understand, shnos. Shnos can mean years, but shnos can mean the differences. What is shoneh? What's different of each generation? Every generation is different. Their circumstances are different. The Yetzer Hara is different. The Nisyonos are different. Every generation is different. And therefore, even though you can learn from history, you can't apply what happened in one generation necessarily carte blanche to what's in your generation, because there are differences. But you can learn enough to be able to understand how that applied there and how to adapt it to your situation. But you can't take it and apply it to your situation carte blanche. Let me give you two examples of that. Every generation is different, and therefore, just because this generation did X or Y or Z is what we should do. Every place is different. I'll give you what may be okay in one generation or in one place may be 100% not okay in another place. I'll give you an example to that from a Dvar Torah, and then we'll see how it applies. Before we left Mitzrayim, we were given a mitzvah to take gold and silver, but there was another thing, clothing, Egyptian clothing, and we were told to put it on our children. Now that is very strange, because one of the zechuyos we had to leave Mitzrayim is that we didn't change our mode of dress and we didn't wear Egyptian clothing. And now we're leaving Mitzrayim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, take Egyptian clothing and put it on your kids. What kind of chinuch is that? What did the Rebbe want to do? We should go out of Mitzrayim masquerading? What was the purpose? So there's a kli yoker there that says a nice pshat. You can look it up. I'll tell you what I think. And even this, if this is not pshat in that pasuk, it's emes 100%. But I think that it may even be the pshat in the pasuk. Why HaKadosh Baruch Hu did that? One reason. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to know that there was nothing intrinsically wrong with that clothing. It wasn't shatnez. It wasn't natsanua. Because if any of those things would have applied to the clothing, we couldn't have worn it, couldn't have put it on our children, chas v'shalom. So it must have been 100% kosher according to the Shulchan Aruch. But, said the Rebbe, and therefore I want you to take the clothing and put it on in the desert. Put it on your children even. No problem with chinuch. But had you worn that same glatt kosher clothing the last 210 years in Egypt, you never would have gone out. How could it be? Either it's kosher or it's not kosher. The answer is, in the desert, where there are no Egyptians, it's 100% kosher, and you can judge it on its merits. It's not shatnez, it's not natsanua, fine. But had you worn that clothing the last 210 years in Mitzrayim, you would have been wearing it to be like a Mitzri. That's treif. Even though there's nothing intrinsically wrong with it. Give you two examples to this idea. First example, when I was in high school, the rage of the world was the Beatles, not the six-legged variety, but the two-legged variety. They were a rock band from Liverpool, England, and they started a fad in the world, many fads, but one, that respectable men began growing long hair. Until then, only hippies, bohemians, men had long hair. But the Beatles had long hair, right? Especially their drummer, Ringo Starr. And men started to, mimic them. So they started growing long hair. It became stylish for lawyers, doctors, respectable businessmen to have long hair, which up until that point wasn't the case. And whatever affects the Goyish world eventually affects the Jewish world and even the Frum world. So I was in a yeshiva high school in Miami, and some of my friends stopped taking haircuts. And after about 3-4 months, it started looking like a co-ed school. So my Rebbeim one Friday called in these boys and said to them, you are to go today and take a haircut, a normal men's haircut for Shabbos. Because if you don't, you are not welcome to come back on Sunday. You are suspended. So my friend said to their Rebbeim, but Rebbe, a Nazir grows his hair long, and he's holy. We just want to be holy people with long hair. They said, did you ever see the Ragachev Ragon? He had a gigantic head of hair, because they say he never took off his yarmulke to get a haircut, because he didn't stop learning. We just want to be like the Ragachev. My Rebbeim were not fazed by that, and they said, haircut or don't come back Sunday. Why? Could be there is nothing intrinsically wrong with having long hair. A Nazir has long hair, he's holy. The Ragachover Gaon had long hair. Could be that if you go through the Shulchan Aruch, you won't find any halacha that prohibits you from having a man from having long hair. But if the reason you're having long hair is to be like the Beatles, it's treif like chazah. Could be 100% okay, but if the implication is this, then it's not okay anymore. So in one place, in one time, could be long hair for one person is fine. And for somebody else, not okay. I'll give you another example. When I first came to Eretz Yisrael, I decided that in certain areas I'm going to be more Israeli. So I said, one of the areas is I'm going to get Israeli sukkah decorations for my sukkah, and all the decorations I had in Chutz Laaretz I'm getting rid of. I'm going to outfit my sukkah with a completely new array of decorations. So after Yom Kippur, my first year here, I went to Geula to buy new sukkah decorations. And as I get closer and closer to the tables that were out in the street, I said, something, these decorations look very familiar. And as I got closer, they were very familiar. They were Christmas decorations in the original packaging that said, Merry Christmas. And all these Yerushalmis were buying them up like they were who knows what. And I'm sure they had no idea what they were. They couldn't read English. I was sure I was going to go on Chol HaMoed and see a sukkah decorated with a little baby and some shepherds around or whatever. And they're going to tell me, no, Gamsa Mishpacha, beautiful sukkah decorations. I'm sure that these Yerushalmis, had they come to America during December, they would have said, hey, these guys stole our sukkah decorations. They had no idea what they were. For a Yerushalmi in Yerushalayim at the time, who had no contact with Christians, only with Muslims, they never saw a Christmas tree. They never saw Christmas decorations. For them, it was 100% okay. But use those same Christmas decorations in America could be chukas hagoyim. So what's okay in one place, because it has no implication, could be treif in another place, because it does have implication. Similarly, what one generation did may be fine for that generation because of their specific situation, but may be no good for another generation. Another example. Michta Meliol says that every generation has its Yetzer Hara, and the way to combat the Yetzer Hara is fight fire with fire. Example, in the Rambam's time, the Yetzer Hara was Greek philosophy, Aristotle. They thought that Aristotle was the last word in truth, and whatever Aristotle said was true, and if he contradicted the Torah, then Aristotle was right and the Torah was wrong. So how did the Rambam combat that? He wrote Morin Nevuchim, the Guide to the Perplexed, to show that where Aristotle was right, he didn't contradict the Torah, and where he contradicted the Torah, he was wrong. So he wrote a book of Greek philosophy to fight Greek philosophy. Now, if somebody thinks that generations don't change, and therefore everything remains static, and whatever applied then applies now, and you don't have to be sensitive to Shnos Dor V'Dor, to the differences of generations, then all the Kiruv organizations today are superfluous. Because all you really have to do is invest money and print Morin Nevuchims in the language that people understand. Go to Kikar Tzion. I don't mean you should go to Kikar Tzion, but to what's it called, Ben Yehuda, and call all these estranged youth out of the pubs and tell them, I know what's bothering you. You think that Aristotle is the last word in truth. So I'm going to read you some select portions of Morin Nevuchim, and that will bring them all back to the Torah. How many people do you think you will be makariv like that? Zero. You know why? Because the Yetzer Hara of this generation is not Greek philosophy, or for that matter, any philosophy. The depth of thought of most people of this generation is, do I want mustard or ketchup on my hot dog? And even that's difficult to decide. So that's not the Yetzer Hara. There's a different Yetzer Hara, and therefore you need different kalim. So just because this is what was right in the Rambam's time doesn't mean it's right today. The Torah didn't change, but how you deal with the Torah has to change according to time, place, situation, circumstance. Another example. The when they started the Chinuch Atzmoy schools here in the 50s, the Gedolim said that the Mamlachti Dati schools, there was two kinds of schools here. There was Mamlachti, the regular public schools, and then there was the public religious schools. But they both were run by the government. So the Gedolim said you can't have a school teaching Torah that's run by a government that doesn't believe in any Torah. So we have to have independent schools. So they started Chinuch Atzmoy, which was supported partially by the government, but the government had no say in who the teachers were, what the curriculum was, or whatever. It was Atzmoy, it was independent. And it was run by Gedolei Yisrael. So the Shaila was, what language of instruction should be in the Chinuch Atzmoy schools? Those are the Beis Yaakovs and the regular day schools here. So Shaila was discussed amongst Gedolim, and everybody assumed that one language it surely wasn't going to be was Ivrit, was modern Hebrew. Because the Yishuv HaYashon made a war, right? Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld made a holy war against Hebrew. They didn't speak Hebrew, only Yiddish. They refused to speak it. They called Ivrit the blind language with two vavs, Ivrit, right? The language of the blind. And supposedly, what's it called? Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld once met Eliezer ben Yehuda at some kind of a function. Eliezer ben Yehuda was the father of modern Hebrew. And Eliezer ben Yehuda said to Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, I don't understand the Rav. How you can be against Hebrew, it's Lashon HaKodesh. What do you have against Lashon HaKodesh? So Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld supposedly said to him the following. He said that wine is a very holy thing. You could use it for Kiddush, Havdalah, Koshel Bracha, Sheva Brachas, very holy thing, wine. But if the wrong person touches it, the wine becomes prohibited. It says in Shir HaShirim, Kikeich Kiyein HaTov, your palate, your mouth, is like good wine. Just like wine is holy, but if the wrong person touches it, it becomes Aser, so too language can be holy, Lashon HaKodesh. But if the wrong person, like you, touches it, right, it becomes prohibited. So Eliezer ben Yehuda said, Harav medaber shtusim, to which Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld said, Be'ivrit omrim shtuyot. In any case, whether it ever happened or not is... But you see that they made a war against Hebrew. So everybody assumed that modern Hebrew is not going to be the language of instruction in the Beis Yaakovs, in the Chinuch Atzmoy schools. They went to the Chazon Ish for a psak, and the Chazon Ish said the language of instruction in the Beis Yaakovs is going to be modern Hebrew. So they already put signs up in Mei Sharim, the Chazon Ish went up the Derech, whatever, and somebody asked him, how are you talking? They made a war. The generation before us made a war against speaking modern Hebrew, and you're paskening that they should teach that in our schools? Modern Hebrew should be the language of instruction? So Chazon Ish said to them the following. He said, let's say you had a general in World War I who was an expert strategist. He planned many battles, air battles, and what's it called, and was successful. Now it's World War II, and you want to take him out of retirement to plan an air battle for you. You ask him, right, give us a strategy. And he gives you a strategy that is good for box planes. Put him back in retirement. There's no box planes anymore. There's jets. It's a different strategy when jets are fighting than box planes are fighting. Things change. You have to change your strategy. He said, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld was fighting a generation who grew up in frum homes and turned their back on Torah, but had guilty consciences, youth that grew up in frum homes. And they felt that they needed something to substitute for Torah and mitzvahs because they had guilty consciences. So they substituted for Torah and mitzvahs Ivrit and Eretz Israel. As long as you live in Israel and you speak Hebrew, you don't need to do the Torah. Torah was for chutz laretz. So they felt comfortable giving up the Torah that they were brought up with because we have something else. We have Ivrit and we have Eretz Israel. So Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld fought against that. And he said, we're not even going to speak your language. It's not a substitute for Torah. we don't even recognize, in order to show them that they can't use this as a substitute for Torah. He said, we live two generations beyond that. We're talking about people who didn't grow up in frum homes. They're already two generations estranged from Torah. They don't need a substitute. And if we don't teach them, teach this generation in the vernacular that they understand, we're going to lose a whole generation. It's a different war. You need different weapons. So, binu shnos dor vador. Of course, it's the generals that decide what kind of weapons to use. But the idea is true. You can't learn from history and just apply what happened in a different place at a different time with different circumstances to your time, place, and circumstances. Because maybe it's wrong. It was right then, in that place, that time. Not that Torah changed. Torah didn't change. But how you relate to the Torah has to change in place, time, and circumstance. So therefore, binu shnos dor vador. Yes, remember history. But understand the differences between generations. How do you learn history? Sha'al avicha v'agedcha. First ask your father, what happened? Ask the people who were there what they experienced. You can't learn history unless you have eyewitnesses to what happened. So first ask the people who were there. Ask your fathers, the previous generation, who witnessed these things, who experienced it. But that's not enough. And v'agedcha, and usually Jewish history is going to be very harsh. Haggadah is kasha kegidim. It's harsh words, Haggadah. They will relate to you. They will testify to you. Haggadah also is Haggadah's edus. They will testify to you, and usually in harsh terms, because Jewish history, most of it is very hard to swallow. Very harsh things. But then, after you know the details, then zekeinecha ask the talmidei chachamim. Zekeinim are zeshekana chachma. The Yomrulach, and they will explain to you softer how to understand these things in light of Torah Hashkafa. That's how to learn history. Remember, but recognize the fact that there are differences. Ask your father to testify to you what he experienced, and you know that you're going to get, a lot of times, very harsh words. And then ask the Zakenim, the Talmidei Chachamim, to explain to you in softer terms how to relate to these things, how to understand what the lessons are, which will make it more palatable. That's how to learn history. At least that's what the psukim mean in my estimation. Yes?
So when we have tshuva from like the past, when people from Gedolim were reverend in the past, how can we ever use that, read that myself? That?
You can't. And Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in his tshuvas that the most terrible thing is people just look at the last line, see what the question was, what the answer is. But he went through a whole tshuva explaining how he came to that answer and what it was based on, what were the circumstances. Maybe even in the same generation, the question that was asked is a little bit different because the circumstances are a little bit different. And it's not going to be the same answer. Or maybe two people come with the same question, but this one's circumstances are different than this. This one needs this answer, this one needs this answer. Or maybe, right, Rav Moshe himself says, there are questions that are asked about Eretz Yisrael. He says, I can't answer them because I don't know the circumstances there. I know the circumstances in America. But maybe the Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael are aware that there are certain circumstances that my answer that I would give based on my knowledge of the circumstances in America would not fit in Eretz Yisrael. If you ask, you know, are Christmas decorations okay? In America, maybe not, but in Eretz Yisrael, there's no Christians. Well, there weren't for a while, but there's no Christmas trees in Yerushalayim. There weren't, at least when I came here. So maybe it's not, it's okay. So you're right. You can't rely on a tshuva unless you know what the circumstances were and that the circumstances are exactly the same now. If they're not, then you can only use it as a guide, but you can't use it to transfer what was said over there to your circumstance unless you know it's exactly the same. Any questions on this? Next thing. Okay, it's mentioned shadim. That's usually a hot topic. Unfortunately, it's really not important altogether, but those are unimportant topics what people are interested in. just mention to you, the Gemara says that Shadim are creations that are partially like human beings and partially like a Malachim. They are partially spiritual, partially physical in their physical states. In other words, Malachim are totally spiritual, and human beings are pretty much body-wise totally physical, except we have a neshama, and Shadim are somewhat like Malachim and somewhat like human beings. They reproduce like human beings, they eat like human beings, they, not exactly, but they go through that process, and they also die. When they're like Malachim in the fact that they, not physical bodies, they're more spiritual bodies, and they're not visible, and they are, what other things? I think they can know what people think? No. What is there other things in Malachim? I don't remember now. They're in some ways like Malachim, in some ways like human beings. And they were created to serve a purpose, mostly to either help people or to bring punishment upon people. You know what you can compare it to, even though it's not what it is? Bacteria. Bacteria, right, can't be seen, but they were created to help. There's bacteria that helps human beings, makes cheese, and so on, right? There's good bacteria. And then there's harmful bacteria that make people sick. The Rav Hashem created that as a tool to use for reward and punishment. He created Shadim for the same reason. They are a tool for reward and punishment, partially. There's other reasons for Shadim, but that's one of the things. You can't see them. You can't see bacteria either. But the result, there are opinions that say that their Shadim do not exist anymore, that they cease to exist when, in the time of the Rambam already, they weren't Shadim. The Rambam doesn't speak about them. Some say the Rambam held that they went out of existence. It also says that if you don't, not concerned about them, they have less of a connection to you and less of a shlita. So the more you're concerned about them, the more you should be concerned, and the less concerned about them, the less concerned you have to be. Okay. Enough. Yes?
Why do we have a, like, Chazan and Kala have a Shomer and Shomer on the day of the wedding?
The chosen and kala having a shomer is not necessarily from shadim. Not necessarily. It's that the greater a person, and there are all kinds of negative powers, not only shadim, that can affect a person, negative powers that are part of the Yetzirah or whatever. So having a shomer protects you from the being singled out and being made greater is not only a positive thing, it's a negative thing too. When a person is singled out and he is higher, his Yetzer Hara is bigger, and therefore the things that can affect him, the different dinim and different mekatrigim, right, are greater also. It's not only shaitan. Yeah, somebody else had a question? Okay, let's go on to the next thing, and then we'll... Okay, this I think we'll save for some other time. One more thing. It says that Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, the end of the Seder, it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to go up to Har Nevo to die, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, in the midst of the day. This is one of the places where it says Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. There's really contradictions in Rashi, because some places he mentions all the places and some places only some of them. That's not what I want to speak about. Where are the places that the Torah says this? It says it Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh by Noach. Noach went into the Teva Be'etzem Hayom, because there were people who said, right, if there in fact is going to be a Mabul, then we will prevent Noach from going into this Teva. He's going to die with us. So God said, okay, I'm not going to bring him in the middle of the night. Middle of the day. Anybody want to stop him? See if he can stop him. And he's encircled the table with bears and lions or whatever. And he said to the people, you think you're going to stop Noah and thwart my plans? Try it. I'm not going to do it in the middle of the night. I'm doing it in the middle of the day. See what you can do. Same thing. It says, Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. Because the Mitzrayim said, if we see them trying to leave Mitzrayim, we're going to stop them. So God said, fine, let's see. I'm not going to take them out in the middle of the night. Take them out in the middle of the day. You want to stop them? Let's see if you can. It says by Avraham Avinu that his bris was be'etzem ayom hazeh, because people said, we won't permit him to do this. And God said, we'll see. We'll do it in the middle of the day. See if anybody can stop him. And here also, Klal Yisrael said, if we see Moshe Rabbeinu going up to Har Nevo to die, we're going to stop him. We're not going to let him die. So the Ravon Shom said, I'm going to take him up, be'etzem ayom hazeh, not in the middle of the night, undercover, right? Middle of the day. You want to stop him? Let's see if you can stop him. So I understand how people could think they could stop Avraham Avinu from fulfilling the mitzvah bris milah, how they could stop Noah from entering the table, how they could stop the Jews from leaving Mitzrayim. How do you stop someone from dying? Wait, hold on to his hand. We're not going to let you die. You'll get a heart attack. You'll get a stroke. There are a bunch of people who zap him with a lightning bolt. What are you going to do to stop him from dying? So I saw some say that since God said you have to go up to Har Nevo and there you'll die, if he didn't go to Har Nevo, he couldn't die. That was a condition. I have a better pshat. They couldn't do anything. But the Torah wants us to know. You would think Moshe Rabbeinu has now been giving them Musar for more than a month. Okay? From Rosh Chodesh Shvat till Zayin Adar. It was one Musar, Tochacha, warnings, klolos. You would think the Jewish people said, you know, Moshe, nice guy, but, you know, it's about time. Bye, Moshe. You know, too bad. Sorry to see you go, but there's enough already. Yet the Klal Yisrael, if they could have stopped Moshe Rabbeinu from dying and kept him with them, with all the Musar and everything, they would have done it. That's what the Torah wants us to know. That had they been able to stop him from dying, they would have chosen to do that. They weren't happy to see him go because he gave them all this Musar. They would hold on to him. Of course there's nothing they could do. But the Torah wants us to know that if there was something they could have done, they would have done it. It's the praise of Klal Yisrael. That if they could have stopped Moshe from dying, they would have done it. That was their desire. That's a great shevach of Klal Yisrael to say that this guy has been giving it us over the head for the last month and a half. Enough with him already. And no, they didn't say that. They said that if we could stop him from dying, we keep him with us. That's what it means. It doesn't mean literally that they thought they could do it. But if they could have, they would have. That's the shevach of Klal Yisrael. Yes. It's a good question. I don't know if it says that by Aaron, everybody mourned him, because everybody, men, women, and children, had a kesher to Aaron, because he made shalom with everybody. But Moshe was more to the men. He was the teacher or whatever. So the women didn't have that much of a kesher to Moshe Rabbeinu personally, so they didn't mourn him as I don't think they were punished for not mourning Moshe Rabbeinu properly. I think it says that. It just says that the Metzias was that by Aaron called Beis Yisrael. Men, women equally mourned him. By Moshe, he had more of a connection to the men as a Torah giver or whatever than to the women, and therefore the women didn't feel that loss as much as they did by Aaron. That's all. Even let's assume that you're right. Okay, and there is such a medrash that says that they didn't mourn for Moshe Rabbeinu. Had they had the chance to keep him around, they would have. But once he's gone and there's Yoshua, they didn't feel that now that they were missing that much because they had somebody else. That could be the reason, if there is such a medrash, why, even though they would have kept him alive, but when he's gone already and we have Yoshua, okay, you know, there's cry for him, but, right, life goes on. That could be. Okay, we will have one more thing I wanted to speak about, and we'll save it for another time. It's more how or less the Rabban Shalom punishes people, and in fact, maybe next week, we have a shiur next week, Monday night, Aser Shmeichuva. Okay, so maybe we'll start with that, because it really has to do with Schar and Onish, and why people suffer for other people's aveiras or whatever sometimes, so we'll speak about it.